Hey y'all, welcome back to Kudzu Killers. Kim and I are so happy that y'all have joined us again today. And today I have an interesting story that I'm really surprised. It's kind of been very deeply buried because it is about a man called Gregory Davis, who was a serial killer you probably have never heard of in the late 80s in Mississippi. And I was appalled by his crimes. More so, well, y'all be the judge. He murdered defenseless elderly women, most over the age of 80 years old. He beat, raped, strangled, mutilated, and had sex with their dead bodies.
Oh, jeez.
He was a peeping Tom, a necrophiliac, and a cold-blooded killer. This is how it all started. Gregory Davis was born in Jackson, Mississippi in 1966. Kim and I have been to Jackson, Mississippi plenty of times, haven't we?
Yeah, we've been through there.
Well.
On our way someplace else, usually. But yeah.
On our way to New Orleans, usually. But anyway, he was the son of a Baptist minister. At an early age, he developed a sexual fixation on older women. The public library was his favorite hangout, but for not the reasons you may think. He would lurk for hours through the stacks, spying on women, and sometimes reaching through the stacks and through the books to fondle and grope unsuspecting victims as they browsed for books.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody reached through the books to grab me and fondle me, I think I'd go around the other side and smack him in the head.
Well, I know you would. And if it were me, I mean, and I know you too. I mean, think about all those books. You grab a book. If you don't have a book bag in your hand, grab a book.
Yep.
Right? There's weapons
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he would like, peep through and look to the other side. And what's he seeing? All he's seeing is their tight sweaters or their boobies right there. So he'd brush his hand against their breasts and then whip back or brush his hands even lower down to their behinds or their legs. I mean, to me, this is kind of a new twist on peeping. It's sort of a mixture of peeping.
Well,
and
it's not even. It's molestation is what it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's pretty bold. It's not peeping, but it's taking it to the next step. So in January 1985, librarians called police on a patron's complaint that Davis was crawling around on the floor and peeping up her skirt and touching her legs. Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a lot of nerve. I'll give him that.
Well, I know
it. A public library.
I know he's really bold because in a way you're sort of trapped in those stacks. You know,
yeah.
If y'all think about it, they're dead ends basically.
It must have been a high for him to do it in a dangerous place, a place where he could get caught or something.
Well, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. But anyway, so the police came and he was arrested for peeping and touching, and he was charged with disorderly conduct. Now,
which is nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. But when the police frisked him and they checked his pockets for weapons, he was also carrying two stolen credit cards.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, his father, remember, his father's a minister and he has an upstanding reputation as a minister. He was humiliated by this.
I'm sure.
So even though the charges were only misdemeanors, he packed his son off to Albany, Georgia. He got him the hell
just move out. Him someplace else so he can do it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there, Davis enrolled in the Job Corps. And this is a program supposedly to help people get jobs, to teach them. It's a training course.
Mm-hmm.
But geography didn't deter him. So he applied the new situation to his advantage because where there was relatively another captive group, again, it was kind of a school classroom situation. He'd take this opportunity to drop his pencil in class as an excuse to wriggle and wiggle under the desk and fondle, again, the women's legs, right?
Yeah.
I know. Man, I really wish one of these women would have just kicked him right in the face. I mean, yeah. even out of reflex, right? Just right. Give him the smack with her pointy shoes. But that never happened. And of course, he continued to become bolder and bolder and, of course, need more stimulation. So these quick and dirty thrills were not giving him lasting satisfaction. So he upped his game, and on at least one occasion, he reportedly exposed himself in the classroom.
He's got to have a few loose screws because, I mean, who would do that? You're going to be seen and caught.
Well, you would think that the men in that class, at the very least, would have tackled him or... done something, right? He couldn't have been the only guy. I mean, I'm speculating, but you would think. So anyway, Albany police later accused Job Corps leaders of covering up his escapades in order to spare themselves embarrassment.
Probably. Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he's still in Albany, right? He's still in Georgia. So on October the 17th, 1986... 59-year-old Lucy Spillers was killed in her Albany home, one block from the warehouse occupied by the Job Corps trainees.
She's 59? Okay.
She's 59. Mm-hmm.
And it's one block away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Police found Miss Spillers tied to the foot of her bed with a rope. The rope was around her neck. And she had been sexually mutilated with a butcher knife.
Oh, gee. That's horrible.
It really is. It's pretty horrific. So no one suspected Davis.
Well, I wonder why not.
Well,
I mean, he's been exposing himself all over creation a block away from the house.
Well, I know. I mean, it is, in a way, it's a pretty big leap from flasher to peeping Tom to murderer, as his pathology goes, right?
Right.
Okay, so then by November 1986, within just a few weeks, Davis was back home in Jackson. And another 2 weeks go by, and on November the 18th, 81-year-old, an elderly lady, Mary DeWitt, was sexually assaulted and beaten to death in her home.
Oh, coward.
Uh-huh. 3 weeks go by. And on December 11th, Bertha Tanner, 83-year-old, was also beaten to death and sexually assaulted. All of the same patterns.
That's crazy.
Well, it's just kind of, I don't know, it makes you wonder where he got his kink on, you know?
Right.
I mean, my brain, this is kind of sound probably horrible, but my brain makes me wonder, what was he doing in the church when his dad was the minister? Was he crawling around on the floor under those pews? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of those ladies were, they're older ladies that are up in the church like that, right?
Right.
At least they are in Mississippi. They are. So it just kind of makes you wonder, why is this his kink with the older ladies other than... they're weak, they're easy targets, they're prey, they're easy, they're not going to fight back.
He didn't have any history of of a elderly person, like a grandmother who took care of him, or?
Not that I know of. It was really hard to find anything about any of this, and it surprises me, because he did kill all of these people, and... Mm-hmm. There wasn't even anything on the majority of the victims. I mean, we're going to talk about the main victim and what finally tripped him up here in just a second. So I do believe that would be a good time for us to take a break here for our sponsors. And if you guys might like to take a break too and go over and support our show, you can certainly help us out at KudzuKillers.com and buy us a coffee or buy us some iced tea. And that helps with our production costs and, of course, our undying gratitude. So we will be right back.
Hey, everyone. You're invited to Harpy Hour.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph.
We are the Harpies, and Harpy Hour is our new podcast featuring ridiculous stories in history, science, and entertainment.
Were you ever suspicious that pigeons were secretly spying on you?
How do you know who to eat first if you survive a shipwreck?
Do problematic musicals send you into an uncontrollable rage?
If so, then Harpy Hour might be your new favorite podcast. That's H-A-R-P-Y for Harpy, and new episodes air every Tuesday wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also find us on all social media at Harpy Hour Pod.
And check us out on HarpyHourPodcast.com.
Okay, bye!
Thanks for coming back, y'all. And so where we last left off, Gregory Davis had just killed his third elderly victim. So if you're not hating him already, I think you're going to hate him more here in a minute. There seemed to be a pretty big space of time before the next murder. A 74-year-old survivor was attacked on March the 25th, and she provided police with a vague description of the suspect. But then yet another month would pass before they actually tracked him down and got the ball rolling to really send his self to the clinic. So on March 31st, 1987, Gregory Davis went to Manship Street to visit a friend who lived in an apartment there. Davis arrived at the apartment around 7 p.m., but his friend wasn't home. So he walked next door to 901 Manship, the home of Addie Reed, an 80-year-old widow who lived there. Now, she lived alone, and Davis checked the doors and windows to see if she was at home and alone. Then he unscrewed the light bulb on the front porch. Davis then went around to the back of the house where, using a small table, he entered the house through the bedroom window, which was unlocked. I mean, back in the day, we kept our things unlocked.
Well, not in the 80s, late 80s, most places anyway. Maybe a little town.
If you're 80 years old and you're in Mississippi, I don't know. My mother is bad still, and she should know better. But anyway, so once inside, Davis took $8, $8 from Mrs. Reed's purse, and then hid behind the bedroom door as Mrs. Reed entered the room. Once she saw Davis, Mrs. Reed began to scream. Davis struck Mrs. Reed several times in the face and then put his arm around her neck and dragged her from the bedroom into the dining room. After strangling her on the dining room table, he covered her face with a towel and sexually assaulted her.
Oh, no.
Her dead body, y'all. He then left the house through the front door and walked up Manship Street in a westerly direction past a doctor's office. Now, there he threw her purse, a small flashlight, and a jewelry box he'd taken from her house onto the roof of the doctor's office.
What was the purpose of that, I wonder?
What, taking those things?
Well, throwing them up on the roof of a doctor's office instead of, you know, throwing them in a trash can or something.
I don't know. I guess he thought he could just get rid of him like that and, you know, nobody would find him. I don't think he's the sharpest tack in the box, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, and I also don't think he really has a plan. I think that maybe
he's an opportunistic serial
exactly.
killer.
Yeah, okay. I think he probably knew she lived nearby, and even though, because, so hey, I bet he's not home. I think I'll rape this lady, you know, rape her and kill her. What the hell, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, almost a month later, on April the 27th in 1987, the Jackson Police Department received a call from Bailey Avenue concerning a possible house burglary.
Mm-hmm.
Several officers respond to that call, which result in the arrest of Gregory Davis, finally, and his younger brother, Thomas, in the parking lot of Jackson Mall.
Okay, and this was for what?
Suspected burglary.
Okay.
Davis was first taken by Officer Shirley Williams to the Bailey Avenue Complainants Home, where a positive identification was made. I love it that a woman arrested him.
Yeah, good.
I love that. So She identifies him. After the identification, Davis is placed under arrest and taken to Precinct 3 in the Jackson Mall.
So the lady that escaped identified him at the police station?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How did they make that connection, I wonder? I was just curious.
I don't know. After the identification, Davis was placed under arrest and taken to Precinct 3 in the Jackson Mall. Davis was read his Miranda rights, waived them, and was questioned for a brief time about the house burglary. After indicating that he wished to remain silent, the questioning ended.
Okay.
Even though he waived his Miranda rights, and then he said, oh, wait, I'm going to be quiet. Okay, fine. He was then transported downtown to the city jail. So they caught him in the mall, and I'm thinking that they, I don't know if she was a mall cop or if she was a real cop, you know, but
right.
At least they caught him at the mall. So they took him down to the downtown jail. And the next day, on April the 28th, 1987, Detective Charles Crisco noted that Gregory Davis had been arrested for the house burglary on Bailey Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they're starting to put this stuff together. There have been numerous similar incidents in that general area, and Crisco thought these incidents might be related to the Reed murder.
Oh, okay.
So they never really mentioned the other murders, but they're focused on this one, and at least this one takes him down. So, along with his partner, Detective Robert Jordan, Crisco took Davis into one of the interrogation rooms on the third floor of the police department and began to question him at about 1:30 p.m. Before the questioning, Davis was once again read his Miranda rights and waived them, but this time he waived them in writing. What an idiot.
Okay.
So after some preliminary questioning concerning the Bailey Avenue incident and other burglaries, Crisco began to question Davis about the Reed murder. After initially denying any involvement, Davis admitted he killed her. Oh my God.
He just up and said, yeah, it was me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you. I mean, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of pressure or, you know, whatever. He just said, yeah. So the police recorded Davis's statement, had a transcript made of the statement, and also had a policeman take a typed statement. So they wanted it left and right. They wanted it covered, you know. So during the interrogation, the officers took Davis over to the doctor's office on Manship Street, remember? And then, guess what? Yep, they found the pink purse.
They climbed up there and found
the purse. They did. Yep. They found her little pink purse, her flashlight, and the jewelry box on top of the roof.
Okay.
Yeah.
But why did they go to the doctor's office? There are so many unanswered questions about this that you couldn't find information on, isn't there?
Well, it was the roof of the doctor's office, so he threw the stuff on the...
Well, I just wondered why they went there. Did he tell them that...
Well, he probably told them, yeah. I mean, he probably can... this stuff, what I'm telling you here, was what actually came from the court trial.
Okay.
But the other stuff wasn't in there. It's just... I don't know why it's so buried. I really don't understand why it's so buried. Because this boy was a serial killer.
Right.
You know? Gregory Davis's trial began on January 13th, 1988. Davis didn't testify on his behalf, but he offered the defense of insanity. Well, of course he did. Conflicting psychological and psychiatric testimonies were presented.
Of course they were.
Yeah. And at one point early in the trial, oh my God, his eyes rolled back in the back of his head and he passed out. He just hit the ground. he passed out at the defense table. Well, they scooped him up, took him out. That was on a Friday. They scooped him up, took him to the hospital, let him, I guess, recover. And then they started trial again on Monday, the following Monday. The lawyers all cited the stress of a murder trial. Well, gee, you think?
Well, yeah, it should be stressful. You killed somebody.
Exactly. So when the state attempted to introduce certain photographs into evidence, defense counsel objected, saying that the pictures were too gruesome. I guess. Yeah, I can only imagine.
Right.
They were repetitive and that they would prejudice resulting from their introduction would far outweigh any probative value the pictures might have had. Now, I tend to wonder if that's why I couldn't find any pictures, you know. The trial court allowed some of the pictures in and excluded others, including certain post-autopsy pictures. The state also introduced Davis's confession into evidence over defense counsel's objection. Now, according to the Supreme Court of Mississippi, Gregory Davis versus State of Mississippi, on July the 26th, 1989, Gregory Davis was indicted for the capital murder of Addie Reed by the grand jury of the Circuit Court for the First Judicial District of Hinds County, Mississippi. The case was transferred to Forest County for trial on a motion for change of venue. After deliberating for 35 minutes, only 35 minutes, the jury found Gregory Davis guilty of capital murder. The jury then proceeded to sentence Davis to death.
Oh, wow.
From that conviction and sentence, he appeals, assigning four errors within that trial. Finding no reversible error, the court affirmed that the conviction and the sentence would stand. So that's my story for today. I think it just pisses me off that he did this to little old ladies.
Well, yeah. And I don't understand why he had a trial. I mean, I can understand they have sentencing trials when someone confesses, but he confessed, didn't he? Or did he go in and plead innocent after he confessed and wrote down his confession? I mean, what... Why did he have...
Well, he went in, remember, he went in and claimed he was insane, but he never, I don't think he ever denied it.
Okay. So they did have to have a trial then if he just said he was insane, I guess.
Right. Like I say, I mean, the thing that pisses me off so much is that these are the weakest of the weak and vulnerable. They're little old ladies. They're elderly folks.
It's your grandma.
Yeah.
It really pisses me off, too.
Yeah. And
you were such a big, brave man that you went in and attacked elderly ladies you knew couldn't fight back.
Right. And I wanted y'all to hear his name and know what a cowardly, evil person he was. Because, you know, what a creepy dude. And I love the library. And I spent a lot of my time, my whole life there. I just remember as a child, my mother would drop me up with my best friend whose mother was the main librarian, and we would play in the library and run up and down the stacks and all of that. And then, you know, it just creeps me out looking back to imagine who could have been watching us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not that we were his type, but that's not the point.
Well, that's true about anywhere and any place that you go, really. I mean, it's a scary world out there, and you just have to decide you're not going to be scared by it and do what you want to do anyway. But yeah.
Right. We really do need to be aware of our surroundings.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Have you ever had anything weird happen to you at the library, Kim?
At the Memphis Public Library?
Yeah, me too at the Memphis, but that's, go ahead. I'll tell you
but
my
that's
story
a whole
in a
other story. It's a whole other thing, you know.
Well, yeah.
People wanting money and
yeah, me
stuff
too.
Like that.
Yeah, and that was over 20 years ago too. We, you know, I know that in the Memphis Library for me, I had a lady panhandle me in the stacks, and you feel trapped. I mean, I really felt trapped. I gave her a $10 bill, and that was a long time ago, and just to get her out away from me, right? But
I mean, these people are homeless, so we kind of have to feel a little sorry for them. And I do give handouts when I see folks, or I buy them food. Mostly I buy
right.
them food.
Right.
But, you know, they get kind of bold sometimes, and it can get a little scary if they get really bold.
Yeah, because we really don't know how, you know, you just don't know why a person is in a desperate state. And, you know, hey, take my 10, I'm all good. But, you know, I can't imagine if someone was touching me and then diving down behind the books, and it's just creepy.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so I don't know, but I just wanted you guys to hear it from me. And I know it's not terribly as juicy as normal, but if you gonna hurt my grandma, y'all gonna piss me off.
Yeah.
So I'm just speaking up for all our little grandmas out there. So anyway.
All right then. Well, that was an interesting one. And there's another serial killer out there by the name of Gregory Davis in England. So maybe we'll get to cover him one of these days. He's pretty creepy. And I don't think he was a serial killer as much as he was a spree killer. So yeah, we'll have to cover him one of these days, too.
Well, yeah. And he did come up when I was trying to find pictures and whatnot for y'all. But so don't get him confused. This is a totally different situation, and down where the kudzu grows, as it were. So don't forget to catch us on our Forensic Friday, too, where we'll have another great story for you. And on our sister show, To Chicks and a Crucifix, which is more about fun and aliens and whatnot, just to...
Aliens, conspiracy theories, and Bigfoot. Oh my.
Yeah, I mean, we just did a really fun story, or I thought it was fun, about how Bigfoots, you know, they're not found in the garbage patch. They actually have love twos. So please check us out over there. And also, too, Kim, you want to tell them about our newsletter and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. Well, starting at the beginning of April, or the end of this month, March, we're going to have a monthly newsletter come out that's going to tell you guys what we're up to, what we've got coming up for you to listen to, and maybe a little bit about other podcasters that we're friends with and that we enjoy, that you might enjoy. So stay tuned for that. And if you want to sign up to receive this newsletter, you can go to kudzukillers.com, and there's a blank right there on the front page in black and white that says sign up for our newsletter here, or something like that. So join our email list. We're not going to spam you with a bunch of junk email about this and that, you know, and try to sell you stuff and all that kind of stuff. That's not what we're wanting this for. This is just a newsletter to keep up with us, and so we can stay connected to you. And
right. You know. We're hoping y'all want to hear from us, but we're not going to spam you. And there's also something else Kim will mention to you about.
You can go if you'd like to buy Lark some new headphones, which she needs very badly because they're making little fart noises, if you haven't noticed them, that I can't erase. So,
and it's not the real deal. I would, as a Southern lady, I don't foof like that in public, and I certainly wouldn't do it on our podcast. I am mortified to hear that that our editors are telling me that I sound like I'm a foofing in y'all's ears. So I'm so sorry. It's not the case.
So anyway, we have some operating expenses, and if you enjoy us and want to be a part of our Kudzu Killers family and whatnot, as Lark likes to say, you can go on over to buymeacoffee.com and buy us an iced tea. It's buymeacoffee.com/KudzuKillersPod. Or you can go to our website at kudzukillers.com. And while you're signing up for that newsletter, you can click on the little button there that says buy me a coffee. So, you know, you don't have to. It's just, you know, if you enjoy our content and you want to help us pay for our bills for the podcast, you can. That's something you can do for us. That's not an obligation monthly like Patreon and things like that can be. So
it's just you're feeling our love and you're feeling like throwing us a little, looking at it as a tip. It's throw us some beads, mister.
It's the jar out there on the Starbucks counter is what it is.
Exactly. So anyway, thank you again for joining us today. And we're looking forward to seeing y'all soon.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.